welcome to a Practice Chats edition of the Deep Blue Podcast. I'm producer Cleon Wall. No practice for the football team, but how about a musical production? Today we're going to get to know musical artist and walk-on BYU football player Corey Stephon Johnson. Now, Corey and assistant producer Ben Hall are cast members in BYU's production of High School Musical. So Ben and Corey got together to talk about why a football player would complicate his busy life by singing and dancing on the stage.
Yeah, so funny enough, right before spring ball had started, I wasn't sure if I was like going to join spring again or not, because last year in the spring I got hurt. I tore my labrum. And so I didn't know whether I was going to be there or not. And so I was like, I need to do something, right? Just to keep me busy. And so I was walking in the Wilk with my friend, and he goes, we look at the High School Musical poster that they had, and they were just like, hey, you know, come audition. And so he trolls me, and he's like, Corey, I mean, you think you're Troy Bolton already. You might as well just go ahead and do that because you think you can sing and play sports. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to take you on that offer. I'm going to go ahead and do that. So I auditioned just for the fun of it. I didn't think I was going to be able to join spring ball this year. So I was like, I need something to do, and that looks fun. So I auditioned, and then literally not even a couple days after I auditioned, the football team hits me up, Coach G, and he tells me to do my paperwork and make sure I'm ready for spring the next week. And I was like, oh, okay. And so I'm like, now I have both of these things that I got to deal with if I make the musical. So we'll see how that goes.
Man, that sounds crazy. And I remember you had said that before callbacks, you were performing in Rexburg, right?
Yeah. So my brother and my family and I, we were doing this empowerment tour because my brother, his name's Bachelor, and he goes around just bearing his testimony, and he wants to uplift the youth and young adults in a valuable way. And so in Rexburg, we had a concert in there in BYU Idaho's like biggest auditorium. I think about like 1,200 people were there. It was the biggest concert I've ever had, for sure. And so, yeah, we did that, and then we drove back to Utah that same night, and I had an audition for the play the next morning at around 9, I think, was the time.
Yeah, holy smokes, and it worked out because you got into the show. But I want to get into a little bit more about this empowerment tour that you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit more about like what goes into preparing for one of those shows, what your role is in that, and kind of what the response has been from the people that you've been able to perform for?
Yeah, so my role in that is just to help my brother spread the gospel, pretty much, kind of like his companion on the mission, right? So he pretty much bears his testimony, tells his story, which is very empowering for people to hear. Because we have similar stories of being a walk-on and being a member of the church, being African-American. And so my role is pretty much bear my testimony and use the talent that God has given me and sing. And at the end, we come together, we make sure we hold hands and make sure the crowd in the audience holds hands. And we sing Families Can Be Together Forever as our last song. It's extremely fun. And you said the preparation that we get into it?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so for that, it's a lot of practice. We have a band, and they're all members, usually. We have our drummer, Amelia, our guitarist, Ethan, and our bassist, Jorge. They'll all practice with us just in Pleasant Grove, and we'll make sure to practice when we have time. So I have school, and they got work, so it's a lot of trying to figure out schedules, and then we won't practice till like 11 p.m. some nights and finish at like 1.
Yeah.
And so it's pretty rigorous, but it's definitely worth it. You know, definitely worth it to at least help one soul come unto Christ, even if it's just us. You know, it's worth it.
I remember that there was one time when you said you were at a practice, and then someone said like, do you want to play football or do you want to make music? And what was your response to that?
No, yeah, it was so funny. It was shout out to Mo Bamba, man. That was Maury.
It was Maury.
Yeah, okay. So we were doing this kickoff drill, and we had a kickoff return drill. And so pretty much we run to where coaches turn around and block somebody.
Yeah.
And it was my first time doing it because, you know, I didn't play football, mind you, since 2019. So, like, even having the opportunity is crazy for me. But anyways, so I never did the drill before. So I did the drill, and I do it wrong. And they're like, come on, Johnson, come on. And they're getting on me and I think one of the freshmen that came in. And he was doing it wrong. We were just like, we don't know this. And so Maury comes behind me and he's like, hey, Corey, do you want to sing or do you want to play football? Like, you can go make music or you want to go practice. And he was trolling, but he was like still serious though. And I was like, you know what, Mo? You're right, man. You're right. I want to play football. So my next time I go up there and they're like, okay, don't mess up. And then I do the drill correctly. And I was like, yeah. And it felt good, man. It was pretty funny. Those guys are so uplifting. It was great to be around them.
Nice. Well, obviously, you have been in the music scene for quite some time, but
yeah.
But when did you start? Like, was your family always like a big part in your music journey?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, my grandmother, her name is Barbara Lynn. You can Google her after this if you want. She got a one hit wonder. She was a one hit wonder in the 60s, I believe, and she had a hit song at the age of 18. It was called If You Lose Me, You Lose a Good Thing. And she was the first black female artist to ever perform at the American Bandstand. And so, so she was like a left-handed guitarist, which was kind of crazy at the time. And yeah, she could blow. Like, she was a really good singer. And so, it just passed down to my father, who had a huge love for Motown, like the Jackson 5 and the Temptations and even the Bee Gees and just groovy groups like that. And then my mother on her side, she's from Samoa. And so they're always big on music and, you know, how the Polynesian culture is. They're awesome. And so just mixing those two. When they had me and my siblings, they wanted to form a group of their own, you know. So it was kind of like a no-brainer for them. And I've been performing, man, since, I want to say, like 5 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah,
that's
man.
That's impressive.
I've been performing since I was five. It started with a talent show with my brother and our friend Austin. And then I just haven't stopped since. And then we never took singing lessons growing up. So we just watched Michael Jackson videos. My sister watched like Britney Spears and Hannah Montana videos, things like that. I took piano lessons at the age of five. Five is a good number for me, man.
Yeah, apparently. That's awesome.
I was in like a music group with my siblings. My father wanted the Jackson 5, but my mother, you know, she could only get three of us. So it was just me, my brother Bachelor, and my sister Shania. And so we performed, man. We performed actually at the Reliant Arena where the Oilers used to play in Houston.
Oh, no way. Yeah, that's amazing.
So we performed there. We opened up for, I don't know if you know the rapper Bow Wow, if you know that guy. Yeah, we opened up for that guy. Still don't really know why we opened up for him because our music's so different, but
I can imagine.
But the audience loved it. And it was kind of frightening because the Houston crowd, man, they will let you know if it's bad. So we had there was this girl that went before us, and she got booed off the stage.
No way.
Yeah, and it's the Reliant Arena, man. So there's like good amount of people there.
Big deal.
Yeah, and I'm like, oh no. And I think I was 11 at the time. I was going into sixth grade, and I was like, oh, this is horrible. And so we went in, we sang, and they loved it. And it was songs they didn't know because we sang our originals.
Okay, nice.
Yeah, it was an awesome experience. And then once my siblings went to college, they actually came to BYU also. Once they went to college, I just started writing my own music at the age of 14. And that's where my own independent career started taking off. And so
that's incredible. And as of last night, you had an album drop.
Yeah. I had an EP drop. It was a long time coming for sure. So I've been performing for the past couple years since 2023 till now. I've just been performing, haven't been releasing any music. Because I feel like the stuff that I had at the time was really good. Like, I had a song that hit 100,000 views on YouTube and 100,000 streams on both Apple Music and Spotify. And so I was just trying to really push that and push the songs that came with that. But I finally had time to record, which was crazy because all the things that I've been doing, I found time to record like before our shows or something like that. And it all worked out. And yeah, I'm excited. I have a show at this festival on July 4th. I'm excited to perform all those songs there. And then I have another festival. I'm opening up for a Grammy-nominated artist by the name of Durand in August. So I'm excited for that.
That is exciting. Well, in closing, Corey, we want to change gears just a tiny bit. Mm-hmm. Some time ago, you went on a trip with the church and NAACP. Is that correct?
Yes.
And you went to Ghana?
Yes.
Can you tell us about what you did on that trip and like how you even got selected to go?
So the prophet, he is best friends with Reverend Brown. Reverend Brown is the leader at this time, at this moment. He's the leader of the NAACP, or like one of the leaders. It's like, you know, Rosa Parks, Martin Luther King, all those like greats from civil rights era. They started that movement. And so people get confused. They think it's like, oh, the advancement for colored people, so they don't like make room for any of anyone else. But it's more so like to include those people. You know what I mean? And just take notice that inclusivity is important and that we're all alike regardless of what we look like and where we come from, things like that. And so, yeah, it was a great time. Elder Holland's son was there, Elder Holland of the 70, he was there, and Elder Corbett and his wife was there, or were there, and let's see who else was there, Sister Browning, she was there, and Reverend Brown was there, and so pretty much it was to build bridges with the church and the NAACP, and it was pretty much to embrace what had happened in the past in the 1800s with the church and things, because I love the fact that the church isn't afraid to embrace like what has happened. I think it's important. I had never seen that. Like, if you want to learn something about the church, you can just go on the Gospel Library app. Like, it's all there, literally everything. And people like outside the church think we're hiding stuff, but yeah, everything is on the app and on the church's website. And so it's so wonderful that the church wants to change the way people look at us, like let everyone know that we come in peace and we love one another and we're wanting to help each other out. And so pretty much we went to Ghana together to show that side of the church. And me personally, I got to learn about the slave trade and things of that nature, and see it come to life, really. We went to like all different historical places. That was pretty crazy, man. Like, we went to this lake, and at first you're like, this is a beautiful lake. And then you realize that, wow, they were walking through this lake to go be shipped somewhere else. And then you can still smell the stench in there. It's crazy. Like, you can still smell it. And then we went to one of the slave dungeons, which was crazy, even crazier, because there was like this beautiful beach right by the dungeon. And you're thinking, wow, this is such a great view. This is amazing. And then you realize, wow, this is actually where they kept the slaves in this dungeon. And it's right by the beach. And yeah, it was a whole ordeal. And we went inside the dungeons. They didn't have any lights in them. There was like a carved out window where they could like breathe, but it was so high, like you can't get out. So you just Yeah, it was insane. And apparently, like, that's where they used the restroom. That's where they ate. That's where they slept. And so, yeah, they just stayed in there the whole day until they got shipped. And again, you could smell the stench in there, which was that stench was worse than the lakes. But yeah, you could still smell it. And it was insane. It was very eye opening for me, because you'll read about it and you'll be like, oh, OK, that happened. But like, to actually be there, I'm like, wow. And so, yeah, it was definitely eye opening and inspiring for me.
Well, Corey, it has been an honor and a pleasure to have you on this show. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Of course, man. I'm honored to even be here. Go Cougs.
Go Cougs, baby.
Thanks again to Corey Stefan Johnson and Ben Hall for this edition of Deep Blue's Practice Chats. You can find Deep Blue wherever you get podcasts or on the BYU Radio app. Deep Blue is a production of BYU Radio.